Hi, everyone. My name is Vince, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the marathon meetings of the 2005 International Convention of Alcoholics Anonymous. Let us please open the meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Can we have that moment now, please? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Okay. This meeting will be taped in its entirety. Tapes of this and other meetings are available by filling out the forms in your convention materials or by visiting the taping table at the registration area in the convention center. The taping is done in the spirit of carrying the message. There may be some here who are not familiar with our tradition of personal anonymity at the public level. Our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and TV and film. Thus, we respectfully ask that no AA speaker, indeed no AA member, be identified by full name or photograph in published or broadcasted reports of our meetings. The assurance of anonymity is essential in our efforts to help other problem drinkers who wish to share our recovery program with us, and our tradition of anonymity reminds us that AA principles come before personalities. The format of this meeting is that the first speaker will share for 15 minutes and the second speaker to share for 15 minutes. Then the chairperson will call on members of the audience to share. Please limit your sharing to 3 minutes so that we can have as many people as possible to participate. I will gently remind you to stop if you start to go over 3 minutes. Okay, to read the 12 steps, I've asked Claudia S. of New Beginnings of Rhode Island, if you could come up for me, please. Did I say it right? Long Island.
Hi, I'm Claudia. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from Long Island, New York. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry these messages to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thanks, Claudia. And to read the 12 traditions, I've asked Karen H. of the Royal York Group about here in Toronto. Welcome her.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Karen. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personality.
Thanks, Karen. Okay, I'm going to qualify real quickly because I kind of missed that. My name is Vincent. I am an alcoholic. Before I made it into these rooms, I was living a lifestyle of doing the same things over and over and expecting different results. And I did that for quite a few years, and it was not a very good life. It was actually pretty sad. And I'm grateful to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and you people, and my higher power. And I think that should qualify me. Okay, our first speaker this morning is John T. from Earlston Conventory, England.
Great. Thanks, Vince. Good morning, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name is John. Thank you very much for asking me to come and participate in this, the early morning on Sunday marathon meeting session of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's always a privilege to be of service to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that includes even having to rise at this interesting hour to do that. The topic, when I received the information about this little meeting, it's called, I think it's a meeting in your pocket, I guess with reference to the grapevine. And to be honest with you, the only thing I'm going to share with you is my story. With regards to the grapevine and other things, from my sponsor and other individuals, what they've told me, is like has been mentioned earlier this weekend, these things contain information. It's particularly useful to us because it's written by alcoholics for alcoholics. But for me, the only way that I can stay sober on a day-at-a-time basis without the use and abuse of alcohol in my life is to have direct contact with other alcoholics. And that's very important for me today. But let me tell you a little bit about myself and how I got here. I don't like to do that, to be honest with you. I'd rather stand up here and tell you somebody else's story and give you somebody else's life, because that's always been very easy for me. It's been very, very hard for me to talk about my own life and what's going on inside of me, particularly, you know, those feelings and emotions and all those kinds of things that I really would prefer not to talk about. In fact, I'd much prefer to talk about something scientific or something literary, and I could show a lot of slides and show graphs and things like that and really confuse you. But as it's been said, Alcoholics Anonymous in itself, I believe it was Bill W., our co-founder, who himself said that Alcoholics Anonymous is utter simplicity encased in a mystery. And to be honest with you, I still don't know what that means, but it sounds good, you know, particularly from the podium. But to give you a little bit of background about myself, I was born here in Toronto, hence my accent or lack of when it being introduced from England. I was born here in Toronto in the West End and grew up into, I guess you would call it, an upper middle class home in the West End of Toronto. And unlike many of us, I had, to be honest with you, very supportive parents, and I had a lot of privileges in childhood. I mean, I always had a roof over my head. I had food on my plate, clothes on my back. I had grandparents. I knew all my grandparents, and I had parents that were loving and supportive and tried to encourage me to, you know, to be a member of society, for lack of a better term. And hence, I participated in Little League, and hence, I got to go to the Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts when I was very young. And, you know, I got to do things like that. But even from my earliest recollections, I don't, to be honest with you, can't remember really that far back. But my earliest recollections were having that pit in the bottom of my stomach, the hole in my soul. Some people call it the jaws of the black dog, whatever you want to call it, that somehow I was just incomplete in and of myself. And I don't know where that came from. My parents, when I was very young, say 2 or 3 years old, they had one of those old silent video 8 or movie 8mm film cameras, and they would film me on my second birthday, my second Christmas, and I saw this little guy up on the screen, I saw it years later, who is, for lack of a better expression, happy, joyous, and free. He was content with himself to be where he was, doing what he was, and the kid really looked happy on screen. And this was just very difficult for me to come to terms with because of the fact that I never felt like that in my life. I never felt that it was okay to be me, to fit all right in my own skin, and just to be all right. I always wanted something more. I always wanted something different, and hence I led most of my life that way. I was educated here in the West End of Toronto through the public school system and did remarkably well in spite of myself without having to really spend all that much time studying and things like that. But no matter what I managed to achieve academically, or I used to join all kinds of clubs and participate in those kinds of things, but no matter what I was able to do as far as those kinds of things are concerned, I still just never had any kind of peace of mind, any kind of contentment in my life. It was always just, you don't understand, something. I just can't be all right in and of myself. And that was until I should say, I discovered alcohol, which was in my early teens, and my first drink was at a party that where some older kids were hosting, and I was with a guy's younger brother, and we were disc jockeying a dance, and I had found a friend. And interestingly enough, I didn't cross that invisible line that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous right away or instantaneously, but rather I had found a friend that I certainly wanted to get to know better. And so bit by bit, as the years went on, I began to drink more. I didn't always drink every day, certainly not at that time in my life. But as time went on, I found myself to be increasingly dependent upon alcohol. Now, I don't know this because I never realized that, you know, one day I would be called upon to speak at 4:30 in the morning at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I did, I may have taken better notes at the time so that I would be able to say, well, you know, this is really what it was like for me. What I remember, particularly going back through my story, is that, again, I was restless, I was irritable, and I was discontented. And I really wasn't drinking that much. And that's why when I came to our literature and they told me that the problem with the alcoholic center is not in the glass, but in the mind, that began to hit home for me. When I graduated high school here in the West End of Toronto, I graduated most likely to succeed. I was class valedictorian. I had won a number of honors that the school gave to its brightest and best students, supposedly. And I left for university in the fall of 1990 with all kinds of the large promise that we speak about for the alcoholic. And unfortunately, that was soon to turn into a poor performance. And within a matter of years, for lack of a better expression, I managed to piss that all away. And I can't really tell you how I did that. The story that was told to me and that best perhaps illustrates my alcoholism is that of cooking a frog. If you want to cook a frog alive, you can. Don't try this at home. But what you can do is you can take a frog. If you take a frog and put it into a pot of boiling water, the frog's going to jump out because the water's too hot. But if you take a frog and put it into a pot of cold water and slowly, increment by increment, turn up the heat in all of that stove where the pot is, that frog will literally be cooked alive. And that's exactly what happened to me with regards to the disease of alcoholism. Perhaps if I had gotten drunk, stole my father's car, and crashed through a store window, there might have been some sort of early intervention that might have changed my story. But my story, alas, is only my story, and it's my experience of what happened to me. What happened to me is that over a course of really not that many years, but bit by bit, I started to lose friends. I started to lose respect, whatever respect I may have had at one time in my life, of be it teachers, of be it family. I was, for all intents and purposes, unemployable. I was still hanging on by a bare thread at university. I went from this kid, and the only reason that I told you that I had all these awards when I was in high school was to tell you that was within 4 years, I was told that I was a loser by one of my professors, that I would never amount to anything. I was placed on academic probation. I was all but kicked out of the university where I was staying. And to be honest with you, the only reason that I wasn't sleeping on a park bench was because of the good graces of my parents, to be honest with you, who I managed to con, manipulate, and cheat into funding whatever it is that I was doing in Montreal, where I went for university at that time. And you don't realize these things, to be honest with you. If you ask me during this time period if everything's going okay for me, I give you the theme song of the alcoholic, and that is namely that I'm fine, that I'm okay. I just got a couple of bad breaks, you know. But it wasn't like that. When I look back, and I was forced to write these things down when I became a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and started looking and charting my history, because I was told the difference between a history and a past is the fact that a history is written down, and I had to look back, because I would have said, no, not me. Alcoholics are people who wear ropes as belts, raincoats 365 days a year, big Wellington boots, and sleep under park benches, and sometimes that's true, and sometimes that's not. I had to be told, and I had to learn for myself, that it's alcoholism that comes in people, and alcohol that comes in bottles. But again, how would I know this? I told you that I had an emptiness inside of me, and consequently I was a seeker. For a while, in the early 90s, I found myself participating in different religions and praying east to Mecca and things like that because I needed to somehow quiet this madness that raged inside my head. And I met lots of interesting men and women who tried to help me. And that, in some senses, is the theme song of my life. I met many well-intentioned individuals who tried to help me, but the problem was they just didn't understand. Or maybe they did, and I just couldn't identify with them. So information has never been my problem. To be honest with you, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was appalled at how small the big book was. What I like, I don't like 164-page books to tell you exactly what you need to do in order to live without use and abuse of alcohol in your life. I like books that are like 2,500 pages, that are leather-bound, that you put in glass cases on bookshelves, that you don't ever read, but you quote at length. I like things with long bibliographies, long sets of footnotes. And this way, you know, nobody's ever going to read a 3,000-page book to tell you if you're actually right or not. You know, so you could just, you know, spew off whatever you want. When I came into this program, I was asked by my sponsor what I had read. And I was, you know, nodding up and down saying, well, I had read Pass It On, the biography of Bill Wilson. I was reading The Grapevine every month. I liked As Bill Sees It, the little soundbite book that gives you the little quotes, the pearls of wisdom of Bill Wilson. And I thought this was fantastic. When I was asked about the big book, about the 12 and 12, I said, well, they're on the list. That was my arrogance at that time. Because of the fact that, you know, again, I wanted to sort of like be able to find excuses. And as long as you throw around a lot of words and again, a lot of footnotes, that sort of thing, you have excuses. But when it's in front of you in black and white, like when we're forced to write down our histories, when it's there in black and white, you can't deny your experience. You can't deny what happened to you. So as I said, in the early 90s, I was essentially within a short period of time, I had pissed away anything of value in my life. The self-respect was certainly gone, and I couldn't understand how that happened to me. Because I used to drink at one time in my life in my late teens with a group of kids that came from more or less the same socioeconomic background as myself. And we'd go to dances, school dances, and you'd get drunk in a park before the dances. And some of these kids, some of the behavior at the time was sort of like mine, in that they'd, you know, sometimes they'd, you know, pass out, wake up in strange places. They'd maybe throw up, you know, they'd make an ass of themselves and this kind of thing. Now, what's interesting, by and large, every one of these people that I knew back then, when the time came for them to put that proverbial plug in the jug and shape up in their lives, they were able to do that. Some continue to drink, maybe not that much. Others don't, and it's not really an issue for them. When it came time for them to graduate from high school, and some of them went to university, some of them didn't, for the most part, all of them have jobs. Now people are paying mortgages on homes. They're having kids. They have cars. And it's not that the material things are really that important, but it is interesting, isn't it, that these individuals who didn't have a life that revolved around alcohol were able to accomplish. They were able to find a partner and able to do those things that many of us think that would be really just nice to do. But, you know, why am I 30 years old or going on 30 years old or whatever. It took me 10 years, interestingly enough, to finish my first degree, the one that I had started in 1990. And I couldn't understand that. I could never attribute that to alcoholism. How did I come into these rooms is actually a bizarre set of coincidences, if that term could be said to exist, but it really doesn't, as we know, in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was that my father had disclosed to his family in the spring of 1995 that he was a longtime member of something called the Kingsway Group here in Toronto of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to my first meeting as a visitor to see him get what was called a 15-year medallion that I didn't know much about. And I don't really remember much about that meeting other than the fact that there was a gentleman who had been sober for a long time who said many things. And I don't remember most of what he said, but he said, you can't control the things that happen to you in life, but you do have a say in your sobriety. And that sort of really made me stop and think, because there was nothing consistent in my life at that time. I drank most days, not every day. Certainly didn't wash every day, didn't go to bed every day. Certainly there was no God in my life, so why would I bother praying? There was nothing that was consistent in my life at that time. And I went back for the group's anniversary the week after, and I collected a whole bunch of literature. And to make a long story short, I didn't drink that summer, or for a period of several weeks, actually, that summer. Sort of on my own, force of will, but then I had an opportunity to go overseas for the first time to the land of my ancestry in Eastern Europe and picked up a drink the first night there, and we know the rest of that story. I mean, within a matter of weeks, you know, I became a full-blown blackout drinker, and people were still talking about my antics some 6 years later and that kind of deal. I came back to Canada in the fall of 1995, and I was terrified because I didn't know what to do. I knew something was wrong with me. I didn't know what. I had tried to see some psychologists and counselors through the university where I was at the time, and you know, they'd give me the pat on the back, or as my friend David says, you show up with the hairy rolls and put the front on and everything's going to be okay. You tell them what they want to hear and it's fine, but they don't understand. But I didn't know what else to do, so I phoned Alcoholics Anonymous. I phoned Alcoholics Anonymous. They told me to go to a meeting. So I started going to lots of meetings, and I did that my first year of sobriety, and that was in the city of Montreal. Didn't know much about a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I stayed sober, if you will, or dry, or whatever you want to call it, for that first year, just by sheer going to meetings all the time, being surrounded by the good men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous. Came back to Toronto a year later and found a group, which was the Kingsway group at that time, and then that was a big group, so I sort of got lost in it, and then found my way to Royal York Group, where I spent many years until a couple of years ago, where I had the good fortune of being, from the late 90s, I managed to get myself back into university, had to start from the bottom up again, and was accepted into a program that I never thought I would ever get accepted into in Coventry, England, of all places. So I've been a resident there since the fall of 2003, and back home just for the convention, interestingly enough, this weekend. It's different over there, to be honest with you, because of the fact, and maybe I can just sort of try to wrap things up with this idea, is the fact that I've been spoiled, particularly my first 5 years of sobriety. When they say stick with the winners, by the good graces of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to do that for my first 5 years, certainly, or more of sobriety. I had people with long-term quality of sobriety who had what I wanted. I managed to walk in their footsteps. I did what they did, or at least tried to, and made lots of mistakes along the way, and good things began to happen to me. It's a wonderful relief. I mean, all my life I hated being told what to do. Finally, I met people, you know, who were more than willing to tell me what to do, and I did those things, and things began to change for me in my life. And consequently, a lot of wonderful things have started to unfold. I don't have that same kind of support structure in Coventry, interestingly enough. If you go to particularly a meeting like this, I mean, somebody with 25 years is considered a baby, but somebody with 20 years at one of my meetings in Coventry is a rare, few and far between. And it's frightening in some respects, because I like being surrounded by men and women with long-term sobriety who can just show me the way. But there comes a time, I guess, when we have to step up to the bat, as my friend David would say, and you know, and try to give back what's been so freely given to us. So with that, I've gone on long enough, and I thank you very much for my sobriety.
Good job, Jim. To come up next, we have Paul C. from the Royal York Group.
My name is Paul. I'm an emotional alcoholic. And the last few days I've been really emotional. My group is the Royal York Group. My dry date is February 12th of this year. It's not a very long one, so I'm quite quite young this time around. This is the fourth time for me. And each time I gather a little more of a humbling experience in the process towards recognizing I am an alcoholic. I have a sponsor who's with us tonight, who's very supportive. I have good friends in the program that also are here. One in which spoke in Spanish yesterday, and I listened for an hour and a half in Spanish, which I knew un poquito, a very, very little bit of it. So his turn comes this morning at 4:30 in the morning. So come even with me. To give you a bit of my background, both John and I have come from fortunate backgrounds. I was born in Argentina, came to Canada when I was five. My parents were of English descent, although my father was born in Argentina as well. So I have, in terms of my personality, I have the reserved civility of the British and the passion, the intensity, the emotionalism of the Latin character. So I'm a bit of a schizo. The outside, in many times, except when I get with my Latin friend, is to be more reserved. But when he and I get together, all things are out the window. So when I came to Canada at five years of age, we lived in Oakville near Toronto here, and then moved out west, and was very involved with the church out west, and then came back east. My father, just to touch on that for a moment, was a role model in the community. And the reason he was a role model was because he was an alcoholic. But he was very, very active in AA. He was a person who the minister of the community would turn to for counsel. So he was a very strong person, but he was also a person who was an alcoholic. And I really didn't see much of his drinking in my life. I remember when I was very young, seeing him drink one beer early on. And I remember having my first taste, and I said, "That's good." And I think that was about 7 years of age, but I really didn't get into drinking until later in my life, in terms of aside from socially. When I came back to Ontario, I got my degree, I got involved in the corporate world, and it was only in my latter years of the corporate world that I really started drinking as more of a closet alcoholic. No one really knew about it other than my family. In terms of my wife, and obviously, and my children, and a close friend, and all the people that could smell my breath in the morning. But that wasn't many of them, of course, you know, at the office. In fact, most of them, I suspect, that I talked to. As a result of my drinking, as a result of my stress in the work world, as a result of whatever, I had gone through depression and anxiety, and I think one, you know, it's a question of chicken and egg, what causes it in terms of all the different events, but it also had an impact on my marriage, and ended up going through a divorce for the last 8-9 years, and the legal system as well. But my drinking was my way of coping. And in the four times that I've tried to deal with alcohol by myself, one of the biggest problems, in spite of going into AA, my biggest limitation was my intellect. I thought I could solve it myself. When I first went to AA and looked around the room and I heard, "If you want what we have," well, I saw what a group of people there, and I really wasn't that impressed at the first time around. I have been a member of the Royal Yard Group twice now. The first time I had 6 months sobriety before I went out again. And at that time, it was an event that triggered it. In retrospect, I am responsible for having not recognized or blamed someone else for having caused it. In fact, it was my own responsibility, my own actions. And I think the difference this time around is the fact that I will not allow anyone to take away my sobriety ever again. And in spite of all my emotionalism now, there's been a greater amount of peace and laughter and humor. We were talking earlier about when we were dancing 4 hours ago. I don't feel it now, but 4 hours ago I was suggesting to the group that maybe we have a Congo line come in at 4:30 in the morning here and dancing, but that was then. This is now. There have been a lot of very positive things that have happened in the last four and a half months for me. I've been able to help other people as they've helped me. And I think that's one of the interesting things is whether you have 1 month or 1 year or 10 years, there are ways in which you can, if you share and you open yourself up to others, you can also help others who have maybe a little less sobriety than yourself. And I have been able to help someone else in a situation because of my prior experience in behavioral sciences and human resources and also in family mediation, that I've been able to help out in a settlement for another individual who was in the program, which I wouldn't have been able to do had I been drinking. As far as this subject, both John and I have had the challenge of trying to figure out what to talk about, whether it was meeting in a pocket or a message in a bottle. I think it's meeting in the pocket. The interesting thing about the grapevine is I remember the grapevine being in our homes, in our home as I was growing up. I didn't read it at the time, but it was in our home. And looking at the subjects here that were in the pamphlets that were handed to me, in fact, I went over to the Grapevine kiosk and talked to an individual who was the associate editor or assistant editor, and she handed me a box of the Grapevines to hand out to anyone who wants it. But one was alcoholism, a family affair, which affected me, emotional sobriety, which affects me, and subject close to my heart, love, sex, and sobriety. So those are three I'm going to read very closely. It's something that's available to everyone. The last point is there was a situation about a month, 2 months ago, and I'm not sure it would have changed anything, but there was an individual who came to Kingsway meeting that I attended, and we were sitting there, and the individual was very, very nervous about being there. And I'm sure some of you can relate to the fact she didn't want to be recognized being there, but she was really uptight about it. So another friend of mine and myself talked to her. She came to another two meetings. But I was thinking when I was putting my thoughts together for this meeting that had I had the grapevine in my pocket, I could have given that to her to read at home in the privacy, and maybe she could have picked something up from that, because we haven't seen her since. I'm not saying it would have changed it, but maybe, just maybe. So, on that note, I'd like to thank you all for being here this time in the morning, and wish you another 24 hours. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Okay. Okay. Now we come to work. Okay. Okay, now I believe people come up and share for roughly 3 minutes. Is that all it goes? So whoever's willing to come up, you have roughly 3 minutes, and you can comment on the speakers, or you can either way. So, okay, we'll start on this side.
Okay, good morning. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Mike.
Hey, Mike.
And I am from the Belleville Morning Meeting in Belleville, New Jersey. That was actually my home group until I moved about 4 weeks ago. So I identified with our first speaker. My sobriety really started with the words, you know, God, please help me. Lying in a hospital bed after I turned a car over a few times, walked out of the wreck without a scratch on me or DWI. And the pain wasn't the negative consequences of all that. It was the pain inside that wanted, that feeling of wanting to die. Because I knew that alcohol did it this time. That this was not bad luck. It wasn't the road was bad. The car was bad. Alcohol. I was a designated driver. Alcohol did this to me. And I was scared to take another drink. So I went to a meeting about a week later. I found a meeting. And I walked in, and it was a candlelight meeting in Clifton, New Jersey. And these people were going around the table, and they were saying the most profound things I had ever heard. You know, just things like, the idea that we can drink like other people must be smashed. And I said, yes, you know, this is the way it should be. Yeah. Where are they getting this? This is brilliant. And I found it later. It's all in the big book. So, and they were just really plagiarizing. I mean, AA is really, we just plagiarize each other in here. But it was, for me, that meeting was great. And, you know, me with my huge ego, I was just waiting for my turn to speak so I could say something really profound. And the only words that could come out of my mouth were probably the most profound words I've ever said in here, which is, I need help. And with those three words, my journey in the sobriety started. And my journey in the recovery, I think, started when four meetings later, and I was telling the old-timers how easy it was to be sober, they said, you are egotistical, arrogant, cocky, and you'll be out in a week if you don't change your attitude and start doing some work in here. And I started doing a 90-90 like they told me. I got a home group and a sponsor like they told me, and I started working the 12 steps of recovery like they told me. You know, this being a grapevine meeting, I think it's important for us to highlight the importance of literature. And that was a little redundant. I'm sorry, it's early. But no, literature is important because to me, you can't dispute what the literature says. You know, in here, we've gotten so complacent in the fact that there's discussion meetings everywhere, that there's so many discussion meetings. If you look in any meeting book, you know, the literature meetings, and you hear a lot of speakers will talk about this today, the literature meetings are getting smaller and smaller. And, you know, it's nice to see that there's kind of a revival now of the grapevine. They redid the website. They're handing out flyers saying, you know, go to the new website. And they're going to have audio clips, probably from this conference. So it's important that we continue to support the literature. And it's important that we continue to get newcomers to look at the literature, to get into that big book, to get into the grapevine. I carry grapevines in my car. And I get people who get upset with me at traffic lights because I'm sitting there, you know, so my serenity is good. I'm looking at the grapevine because there's a lot of traffic. And they'll be honking, and I remember. But, you know, I'll just tell you that it's been an amazing journey. It's been an amazing conference. I'm getting married on Thursday. And these are the gifts of sobriety, though. I would not have had this without AA. I would not have had this without the message. And I would not have had this without you people. So thank you.
Thank you. If we could just keep it to 3 minutes minimum, please. Go ahead.
My name is Vernon. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Vernon.
And my home group is the Pacific Group in Los Angeles. And my sobriety day is November 4th, 2003. And 3 years ago today, is significant in my alcoholism and my story because it's kind of when I hit my bottom. I lived in a youth hostel. After being in the Army for a while, I was living in the youth hostel in Los Angeles for like 16 months. And that's where I did security on one night, and then every other night I would party, and then security, and then party, and then security every night. That's kind of my routine. And these guys decided to go bodyboarding down a flight of stairs standing up. And when I was sober, I thought it was a really, really stupid idea. But as soon as I had alcohol in me, I thought, wow, what a fantastic idea. Yeah, sure, why don't I go bodyboarding, standing up down the flight of stairs? And so I did. And I didn't just do it once, because being an alcoholic of my type, I tend to touch the hot stove more than one time. I did it two times and ended up with a broken ankle and no ability to do my job at the hostel that I was living at, and ended up on welfare. And, you know, that was at 26, and that's where alcoholism had taken me. And up until that point, I always told myself that I would never be an alcoholic because I grew up in alcoholism, and I never saw it in myself. But it's been a year and 8 months now that I've been sober, and I gotta say that it's amazing, and I stay here because it is such a better way of life than it was out there. I mean, as much as sometimes I think, oh, maybe it wouldn't be so bad out there, in those moments, like today, I was going to go out on the town and see what the town was about. And these two guys I met from Ireland when I had 4 days of sobriety, when they came to visit Los Angeles, they happened to be in my lobby just as I was about to go out the door. And they reminded me how I was when I had 4 days, how confused I was. I was trying to decide who was going to be my sponsor, and I was like shaking and scared. And you know what? I'm not that way anymore. I'm so much... That hole that was spoken about inside of me is there sometimes, but it's so much more complete than it was before. And the life and the friends that I have, and this convention, and the city, and the people in the city, and Tim Hortons, apparently, the coffee shop. I hadn't gone all weekend, and I went for the first time about half an hour ago. Really good coffee, better than Starbucks, in case any of you were wondering. What an amazing thing to be able to meet people from New Jersey and Toronto and wherever else I meet, you know, wherever else anybody's from. It's been phenomenal because I'm almost done. It's good to know that no matter where I am in the world, there truly is a, that I can always go anywhere I want to, and there will be sobriety there. Even China, you know. What a great thing. And I'm just so grateful for all of you to be here. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Carolyn, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from Vancouver, B.C. I've been sober 4 years, thanks to the Sober Men and Women in Alcoholics Anonymous. Today I know it's because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and my higher power, but I wouldn't have known anything about either of those two things without sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous to teach me. Today I think I owe my sobriety to the women I sponsor who've carried me so far in my own growth and learning. And the 3-minute version of my story is I got here nearly too late. Bottom for me wasn't an event. It was after all the events. I'd already experienced civilian and military prisons, and I'd been sent to a couple treatment centers and lost both my parents to the disease of alcoholism. And basically given up. And when I sobered up, it wasn't because of some grand event like any of that. It was just a day. And it was a day I realized that I probably wasn't going to live through my next drunk. And I don't know where that came from. I suspect it was God. And I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to acknowledge the people who do service in Alcoholics Anonymous, because there was somebody who answered the telephone on Sunday, actually probably at about this time, when I called Alcoholics Anonymous, not knowing what was going to happen. I was going to book my interview so I could get approved to go to some kind of meeting. I had no clue how this thing worked. And the guy on the phone said, you know, I can send a couple women over to talk to you, and they can take you to a meeting. And I screamed into the phone, "How do you know where I live?" And I slammed down the phone, and I phoned back and tried to disguise my voice. And this man had the patience of a saint. And he told me where a whole bunch of meetings were, and I went to a meeting of AA and hid in the back. And I went back not because I heard anything brilliant, but just because I had nowhere else to go. And eventually what happened was I heard some people who were talking stuff that sounded like truth to me. And it wasn't a message of hope. They were talking about the disease of alcoholism. They were talking about the fatal nature of our disease. They were talking about how most chronic alcoholics are doomed. They were talking about how we're beyond human aid. And none of that was really good news, but it had a ring of truth to this alcoholic. And as soon as I knew somebody was telling me the truth, I wanted to come back and hear more. And once I identified that truth, somewhere later I found a message of hope. And, you know, I just want to really acknowledge the people in Alcoholics Anonymous who show up to do service in the middle of the night, because, you know, without each and every one of them, I don't know if any of us would be here. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Sid.
Hey, Sid.
I'm from northwest of Toronto, a city called Brampton. I've been around the program for since 96. After drinking for a number of years, I started drinking when I was 13 years old, when I really got going. My first drink was 5 years old of age. And like I said, I got into the program at 1996 after one night being out on Main Street and experiencing some hallucinations of a devil being above a building, and I wanted to run out in front of traffic. I got into the program shortly thereafter, after my first experience at detox, but there was a number of after experiences, up to maybe 7 or 8 more, not including psych wards, strap downs, medications, shoved in my arms to take out the alcohol. I would call myself a chronic relapser. I've had problems with the program. Deep down, I think I know that it does a great deal of good. It's a disease where it's very deadly. It's a disease, in my mind, of a disease of the devil, where the devil wants your soul, or at least he wanted my soul. And I ran out of excuses for drinking, reasons, excuses. Today is my second day without a drink. I came down here yesterday morning from Brampton. I got up in the morning, Thursday morning. I had a few days of hard work out in the hot sun. It was another one of my excuses. And don't you know, I deserve a drink. So I went to the liquor store, picked up a couple of strong beers, the 10% kind. And I picked up a bottle of wine for a friend of mine who just has the odd occasional sip of wine. But before I came down yesterday morning, I proceeded to drink that wine. I drank the whole bottle just to straighten myself up. I don't know what type of chance I have in this program, but I met a lot of good people here. There's a lot of professional people, people from all over, a lot of people who make a lot of sense. And this night or at the dance, I have a pleasure meeting a woman that told me straight up that I wasn't quite being honest with myself. I've had a number of long-term sponsors. Some were kind of a mistake in my mind, whereby one had 20 years experience sobriety, who had never opened a big book. So obviously, it was kind of doubtful. I had two others. One was he was a debt collector, and he had killed a family in a car accident of the 400. And another one was a chap with 35 years experience from Kentucky. But my problem was that I just couldn't accept what they were saying to me, and I said, well, you know, this is all kind of a lot of BS, you know what I mean? I try to do it my way. I try to change the word powerlessness.
You don't have much more time. I'm sorry.
Yeah. What I try to do is I try to change my way. But over the last couple of days, I've learned quite a bit. And I really appreciate this convention. It's been really something else. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I have something here for you.
Good morning. My name is Ann, and I am a grateful alcoholic. Thanks to my higher power and AA, I will celebrate 35 years of sobriety in January. And I will be 89 years old, which I never would have been had I not come to AA. I was 54 years when I came into the AA. I was still working in the most dysfunctional restaurant in the city of Seattle. I had owned two restaurants for 18 years, the two, and survived. I don't know how. Somebody was looking out for me. And after working 2 years at the Five Point in the Mecca in Seattle, which was everybody was drunks but me when I sobered up, I decided I'd see if I could run a restaurant sober. And I did for a year and 3 months, sold it, and went back to that hole and stayed there till I was 76 years old. I don't know. I did not allow myself to hang around with them. I love the people that worked there. Some of them got sober doing. One died after a few years of sobriety. She couldn't stay out of the bar. I never went into the bar. I left as soon as my work was over. I had two people in there that worked with me off and on with who had some sobriety that was very interesting. But I have a wonderful life. I was widowed 7 years ago. I live in an apartment 1984. I put in my God box. I wanted to live downtown, have a nice apartment, and I do. I have a swimming pool that I can swim, and days that it's nice, I get out and walk. My health is wonderful. I was a mess when I walked in AA. I weighed 164 pounds. I smoked, I think I burned most of it out working, you know. One day I was so busy I had the dishwasher holding the cigarette while I was turning hamburgers. And I put all that stuff down. I went to my doctor and I said, I want to live. I called a psychiatrist I had gone to 25 years. I wanted to fix my husband. And she said to me, when you're ready to fix yourself, call me. 25 years later, I called her, and I stayed with her until she retired just a few years ago. And she has an article. She's a little older than I am now, and I didn't know that she was still alive. And there's an article in the group health thing for me. When I get home, I'm going to read what she has to say. And she helped me all along with my family. You know, my friend in Al-Anon said the worst thing, she was a manic depressive. She said, and the worst thing you ever did to your family, you got sober. And the worst thing I did to my family, I got an education. So anyway, I have everything that God wants me to have. He will take care of me till the day I die. I'm not afraid of death. I'm not afraid to get on an airplane anymore. I was scared. I had to be drunk to get on an airplane. I'm not afraid to go to sleep at night. I'm not afraid that somebody's going to hurt me or take advantage of me or anything. God has taken care of me all my life, so why wouldn't He take care of me till the day I die? And thank you so much for my sobriety. I take the grapevine. I've taken it ever since my friend gave me one when I first came into AA. And it's a meeting for me. I don't agree with all of it, and I agree with a lot of it. So I enjoy this program, and I hope that I never stop going. Thank you very much for my sobriety.
Thank you. We have time for two more, so we're going to have you and one more person.
Good morning. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Rochelle. I've been sober now for...
Actually, I didn't get you.
Let me do the math here for a second. 41 days and 5.5 hours. 1 hour at a time. thank God for this meeting. My sponsor, I have an amazing sponsor, she said to me. 90 meetings. Oh, bonus. 90 meetings in 90 days. Well, in the last 3 days, boy, I've been racking them up. And I've learned from everybody speaking, alcoholics will find the shortest route possible, won't we? I have learned so much in these last 3 days from all of you. You guys have restored my faith in humanity, my faith in God, my faith in myself, that I can do this, just like you guys. And I want to thank you.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mary, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm from Bismarck, North Dakota, United States of America. And I'm happy to be here in Toronto. Did make Minneapolis. And we didn't get to any marathon meetings last night. And I read the grapevine that was in our packet. And in there, it was an alcoholic telling the story of how grateful she was to Al-Anon. And I just want to thank all the Al-Anons because I came into AA through the back door of Al-Anon. And I'm finding a little gratitude from my mother tonight, even though she isn't practicing the Al-Anon program, because she guided me, you know. And somehow I found the courage to get to AA. And I've been sober now since March 19th, 1992. And I hope to see you all in San Antonio. God bless.
Thank you. We do have time for one more. So if anyone's willing, we have time for one more.
Good morning. My name is Marty Fee. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Marty.
My home group is Berea Men's in Berea, Ohio. It's a men's group. That's what we suggest new people do over there. Although my sobriety date is April 28th of 96. And what I'd like to say about the grapevine, I've been getting the grapevine for free in the mail for some reason since I was a GSR, you know. So to keep sending the grapevine and $4.95, I think it is, the other book. But in any case, thank you. I'm recovered thanks to grace of God and Alcoholics Anonymous. I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, you know. And between me and a drink today, I have a defense. I don't wake up every morning and pray to God, keep me sober this day. It doesn't say that's what we do. It says we ask God in the morning what we can do each day for the man who is still sick. And it also says what is our primary purpose as AA is to stay sober and to help another alcoholic. There's no comma there. It says stay sober and help another alcoholic. That's a sentence. And that's what we're supposed to be. And ultimately, it says what we do is we're to align ourselves to become of maximum security to God and our fellows. That's what it's all about, you know. And my sponsor showed me, you know, I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, so he had to use example to me, physical example. Sometimes I think he had to use flashcards for me. Marty, this is the way it works. But he tells me like this. He says, this is my next drink. It's right back there with my last drink. So I take a couple steps away from that drink and I can still maybe reach back and get it. You know? So what do we do? We do that 180, right? My next drink is behind me with my last drink. And so how am I going to make sure that I put 12 steps between that drink? Thank you. my sponsor said to me when I was first coming, "What'd you do today, Marty?" I said, "Well, I didn't drink." He said, "That's not what I asked you. What'd you do?" You know, and it says, having had a spiritual awakening and working all these steps, in the book it says, we are to continue to grow in effectiveness and understanding. We just keep growing. I'm going to stay green and grow. I'm not going to ripen and rot.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, the meeting has come to an end. I would like to thank John T. and Paul C., our two speakers. If we give them applause, please. And Claudia S. and Karen H. for reading the traditions and the steps. Okay, now would those who care to please join me in closing this meeting with the responsibility declaration. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere, reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that, I am responsible. God bless you all. Thanks, guys.
Is that now?
No, get ready.